Hello, friends. We've all had the experience of holding and believing two contradictory ideas. Simultaneously, for instance, entering two events onto our calendars without noticing until the day of the conflicting commitments. And then? Well, then we're pickled. It can get significantly worse, though. It's perfectly possible to hold competing concepts in our heads without even realizing that they can't be reconciled. In fact, when I asked my undergraduate advisor why he kept me about, what on earth was in it for him, given the strictly one-way nature of our knowledge transfer, he simply smiled at me and said, "It's useful to have someone about who isn't afraid to ask why 1 + 1 = 3. Looking back on it, I guess he too was well aware that he was susceptible to conflating two wholly unequal entities. Notwithstanding the hallucinations of LLMs, computers are generally recognized as being better on this front. Humans have for a long time been well documented as unreliable sorters of tomatoes, for example, their color and size perception shifting over time. This particular example is not such a big deal when you're growing tomatoes in your own backyard. Either you eat everything you've grown, or, in the case of our current abundant crop, you're so spoilt for choice that sorting doesn't really matter. For those curious why this is on my mind, we built a hugel culture atop a pile of logs, and the results have led me to understand how someone might come up with the notion underpinning the story in Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. Anyway, all of this is preamble to talking about reading. Specifically, a few weeks ago, I got a little nervous about my narration. At times, I was concerned that I was belaboring the words, and then, moments later, I'd feel that I was rushing through the text. Weird that I could concurrently be concerned about being too fast and too slow. It wasn't just the individual words either. Were my pauses too long or not long enough? And what are the gaps between paragraphs? Perhaps the truth is that in some cases, there is no correct answer. It's personal preference, and even that preference is coloured by context. I've encountered a similar phenomenon during my writing process. Though it's not unusual for me to feel, when reading over an early draft of a chapter, that the pace is lagging or in need of tightening, the funny thing is that, once in a while, I'll come back to the same chapter the next day, and in rereading it anew, it'll feel too fast. As if, rather than trimming, what it really needs is some expansion or room to breathe. Same chapter, same me, but completely different reactions. I usually chalk this up to expectation, in which case moving to another part of the story is the best bet, with the plan of returning afresh at a later date. Once again relying on my goldfish memory being my editing superpower, that allows me to experience the chapter in some approximation to that of a first-time reader. Returning to my narration, I am, as always, interested in your thoughts. In the meantime, I'll console myself that at least any narrating imperfections should reassure you that I'm human and this is human-generated. Or are the machines getting that good? Until next week, be kind to someone and keep an eye out for the ripples of joy you've seeded. And now, without further ado, here's chapter 30, in which Mitza encourages Saskia to consider how else she could wield her superpower for good. Chapter 30, A Bridge Too Far. Saskia opened her front door to find Mitza standing on her stoop. Before she knew what was happening, Mitza leaned forward, placed her hands either side of Saskia's head, and pulled her close enough to plant a kiss on Saskia's nose. "Thank you." Saskia burst into a giggle. "You're welcome." Mitza released Saskia and let herself in. But there's so much more you could do. Money is just one dimension. Saskia closed the front door and trotted after Mitza. "You could go back to the Pharaohs. You could really change things." In most accounts of time travel, wherein a character stumbles across the ability to slip back through history or forward into the future, the temporal temptation is to go way back or way forward. to witness pivotal moments in history or see where we're headed in the long run. Saskia, though, had already realised that not only was life as a spectator only so interesting, she was also faced with the very real challenge that her time travel wasn't simply a matter of stepping through a portal. Slipping a long way into the past or the future was manifestly impractical. Like her hike to San Francisco, only a million times more, it just wasn't going to happen. Already, slipping time backwards at 3 or 4 times the standard speed that the world flowed felt as if she was driving a Formula One racing car. Objects appeared unexpectedly out of nowhere. For, beyond the speed with which Saskia thrust through the world, she had inbuilt expectations about the directionality of motion. It was unusual to see a squirrel fall out of a tree, but a lot more disconcerting to see one spontaneously fall back up into the tree. To compound those problems, she lost more time every time she fell asleep. Never mind accounting for any mundane details like using the restroom or procuring food. And she'd never tested whether one could eat while moving through time at anything but the standard flow. But without the physical experience of slogging back a week, Mitza still lived in the land of anything as possibility. How about you go back 100 years, Mitza suggested, back to the turn of the 20th century. Saskia could see Mitza had a specific agenda. Why then? To undo the debacle of the automobile. You take some basic battery tech back with you and tip the scales. Change the course of history. Give electric cars the little leg up they needed to obviate the internal combustion engine. Did you know a third of cars in America were electric in 1900? Saskia shook her head. There's no way I could go back that far. How far could you go? No idea. 10 years? Saskia laughed. No idea, but not 10 years. So you do have some idea, Mitza prodded. I'm pretty sure I can't jump up and touch the moon. That's what 100 years would be. But humanity touched the moon. Fine. But you know what I mean. The stars, then. Maybe we'll get there one day, too. The closest star is over 4 light years away. That means travelling at the speed of light for 4 years. That's so far from reality. Besides, neither has any bearing on how high I can jump. She sighed. Going back isn't just skip to some destination. I have to get there. Physically. To Saskia's surprise, Mitza bobbed her head appreciatively. That makes sense, I guess. She wrinkled her nose. It kind of always bugged me about time travel stories. They never seem to take into account that the Earth is always spinning about. So it's not just a matter of going back in time, it's hitting the place too. But if you're going back continuously, that just makes sense. Saskia was frustrated. Mitza seemed to appreciate what she was saying, but she still felt as if she were responsible for a roadblock. She hadn't meant it that way, and she certainly hadn't wanted to be a party pooper. Find me a problem that happened a week ago, and I'll give it a try. Maybe this is when you go back to the restroom at Cleo's. Maybe. Saskia felt awkward about not having corrected Mitza's earlier misconception. Mitza opened the New York Times on her phone and scrolled through the headlines. Political parties squabbling didn't look like fertile territory, and preventing an earthquake was obviously not possible. For one thing, no one would listen to a Cassandra unless she was comfortable going public, and that just brought more headaches. Then, she found it. A something significant enough to notice, but susceptible to shifting. Moreover, those helped would be uninclined to publicly draw attention to themselves, and thus Saskia. How about this oil spill? She turned her phone for Saskia to see. The Deepwater Black Gold rig. You could go back and stop the spill before it happens. Plug an underwater geyser before it springs? Saskia laughed, but even so she reached for Mitza's phone. Sure, you're scuba certified. Saskia skimmed the article. This subsea blowout is 400 meters below the surface. What's the deepest you've dived? Saskia admitted that, in fact, she had dived almost that deep before. in search of deep sea creatures. But just once, and it required highly specialized equipment, which she certainly didn't own. Mitza closed her eyes, blissfully fantasizing the affair. She was warming to the idea of learning to dive. More specifically, to the notion of Saskia teaching her to glide through the darkness. She knew it was dark down deep. Maybe her hand in Saskia's. Perhaps diving could be their thing together. When she opened her eyes, she smiled at Saskia. "We don't need you to dive yourself. You just need to convince someone else to look into the problem before the cap ruptures." Saskia bobbed her head from side to side, considering. "I'm sure you could be persuasive," Mitza winked at her. That's it for chapter 30. Hope you enjoyed it, and I look forward to seeing you all next week. Cheerio.